Glenn Blake, the most interesting skier in the world. Well, if you didn't know it, you heard it here first. Glenn Blake is the most interesting skier in the world, and we are going to take you through a bunch of Glenn Blake stories. Today, we're going to get some deep thoughts from Glenn Blake, also known as Blakeisms. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and I am going to talk to Glenn Blake, and we are going to discuss Blakeisms, Elan skis. We'll talk about when the ski season really should start, according to Glenn. And of course, we're going to go through a lot of Glenn's unique and interesting stories. So sit back and get ready for some more Glenn Blake. All right, so I'm sitting here with Glenn Blake. And Glenn has traveled the world as a skier, and he's done just about almost everything you can possibly do in skiing. And every time Glenn comes home from a trip, I'm sure he processes a lot of thoughts. And at the end of the day, he comes out with something that he considers a Blakeism. And Glenn, what is a Blakeism?
I don't know if it's a Blakeism or a Blake take. But like you say, I traveled as much as we do. We had the wonderful opportunity to ski with different people in different places and different situations and scenarios in just about every condition in the world. I don't know. They might be survival tips more than opinions. How to keep from killing myself or those around me. I don't know. They're kind of funny, I guess.
I'm sure you've come up with a ton of Blakeisms over the year. And I think we go through your top five Blakeisms and elaborate on them. And I know one Blakeism starts around global warming. I'm sure you've seen the trends over the years. And I want to get the Glenn Blake thought, the Blakeism on global warming.
Oh, I'm the worst about global warming because I really do care about the ecology movement. You know, our ranch has been solar powered for many, many, many years. Our water ski lake is fed with geothermal water. I mean, I'm very aware of the subject, and everybody always has their opinion on it. But anyways, I guess to build a half pipe, for instance, and I love half pipes. I remember when they first came around, we used to build them with shovels and stuff. But anyways, to build a half pipe nowadays, it takes about four or five snowcats working 24 hours a day, sometimes up to 2 months. Those snowcats are burning between, and I'm not going to be exact here.
Sure.
Let's just say they're burning about 300 to 500 gallons of diesel a day. The snow that it takes to do the snowmaking on a half pipe amounts to several acre feet of water a day, or certainly to create it, probably about 14, 15 acre feet of water to do the snowmaking. Lord knows the actual kilowatts burned by the air compressors that are blowing the snow. And all this goes on and on and on and on. And you build this beautiful FIS rated half pipe and you have this wonderful competition and everything's great. And then the winner stands up and goes, "It's all about sustainable snowboarding, bro." And you go, "What did he or she just say?" It's all about sustainable snowboarding, and you just won a half-pipe competition, the most unenvironmentally sound activity ever done in the mountains, I think. I can't think of something more uneco, actually. And believe me, I ain't no saint. I mean, I got a drag boat that, you know, has over 1,000 fire-breathing, big-block Chevy cubic inches. I'm not saying I'm a saint. Yeah, wow. That was a trip. I don't know. I guess my opinion on global warming is, yeah, okay, care about things, but call a spade a spade. Yeah, I've been around the block a little bit on the whole energy thing. And yeah, my half-pipe story. That's pretty trippy, actually. Blew me away.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of power that's used to build a half-pipe that we don't think about. The takeaway from this Blakeism is
half-pipes don't just fall out of the sky, and electricity doesn't just come out of the wall.
All right, there we go. Blakeism number one, half-pipes do not fall out of the sky. Electricity does not just come out of the wall, although it does in my house. So that was Blakeism one. And Glenn, I think you've seen in your career a plethora of different groups on the ski hill, some skiing together, some butting heads against each other. And there's a lot of different factions out there. And want to get your take on the different factions you see within the ski world.
Racism within the ski industry.
Against racers?
Yeah, I was going to say those dang racers. be ashamed of yourself. But it is pretty funny, huh? Because we all laugh. Racer, stick chaser, park monkey, freaking powder hippie, park rat. What's up, poodle? Ski instructor kook. We can keep going, huh?
I think you should, man. These are awesome.
Freaking pinhead. Stupid pinhead. Granola eating hippie pinhead. What's up, mountain guide kook, with your freaking backcountry setup? You know, now we got free riders, free ski riders, free mountaineer riders. Back to the stick chasers. Back to the poodles. Anyways, it's kind of cool how all of us, and I have the pleasure of skiing with all of those groups, especially on our down home tours and different things. But it's pretty trippy how all of us make a commitment to dedicating ourselves to whatever discipline that it is in skiing. I find that incredibly motivating that we can, in fact, be dedicated to whatever faction, whatever race we want to be in skiing. It's kind of cool, actually. And I think if we take the time to look, oh gosh, we didn't even talk about the Nordic kooks. What's wrong with those guys?
They love exercise.
Ski jumpers. What's wrong with you? Anyways, and now you got all the Skimo condom crew. What's that all about? I don't know. Anyways.
I don't even know what you just said to me. Skimo condom.
Huh? The Skimo condom crew? The uphill skiers?
Oh, okay. Okay. That is a big movement.
Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah. Anyways, it's amazing that we dedicate ourselves the way we do to the disciplines that we do. I, for one, love getting a chance to have a glimpse into those different disciplines, whether it's spending a few days on the race hill at Mammoth and literally putting on all my armor and slamming sticks and, you know, and running slalom, or getting deep into some clinics with the PSIA teaching crew, or doing a Skimo race, you know, doing a little uphill race, or hanging out with some hippies out in the hills, doing the powder stack, or sessioning a rail with some kids in the park. I think we should all take the time to appreciate other people's dedication and be inspired by it. And if we're all riding the lift together, you might actually find out that we're very, very much alike. We're just got a burning passion for this thing we call skiing, because that's really what it comes down to, is it's skiing.
There's a whole bunch of ways to ski, but at the end of the day, it's just skiing.
But yeah, no, it is just skiing, even if it is dude booting. They're not skiers. The factions are kind of cool, different crews, whatever you want to call us. But everybody's dedicated and everybody deserves everybody else's respect. And if you take the time, you might be incredibly inspired by one of the other groups, those other people on the mountain. I'm getting long-winded here, but I was on a down-home tour. I was skiing with Patrol. Patrol said, hey, come on, I want to take you for a run. We were going to go somewhere that was not open to the public at that point. However, I'd been skiing with the park crew all morning, and Patrol kind of gives me the nod, like, hey, come down here, lifts up a rope, and says you can come across. Immediately, everybody slams on their brakes, because we kind of got the ski crew with us. And they're like there was this really weird moment of like, you know, that's ski patrol. Why are we skiing with ski patrol? You know, we're supposed to be running from ski patrol and hiding from ski patrol. And I looked at Patrol and I go, they're skiing with me. And he goes, then we're skiing together. And they held it up, and Patrol let like 15 of us kind of go out. You know, it was a nice little sneaky little run that's normally, let's say, closed.
Yep.
And it was just a really cool moment. I'll never forget that, where you had literally the park rats that are usually ducking Patrol right and left. And the Patrol, I mean, everybody knew each other, you know?
Yeah.
And yet here we were, for the first time probably ever in their lives, they were actually skiing together. And it was super fun.
I would say that the takeaway from this Plakeism is never judge a faction, because you can join one, learn a lot from them, and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I could say it's, yeah. Yeah, I was trying to make up some stupid politically incorrect acronym, but I can't right now.
Another Plakeism, or another thing where I think you have worldly knowledge on, is the ski industry in general. And I know you've seen companies from the big corporate dogs to the small guys just trying to start up. And just your takeaway, your 30,000 foot view on skiing and what Elan is doing right with skiing.
Wow, the ski industry is this thing that we love. Certainly for me, it's my well-being. Provides an enormous amount of pleasure for most of us. Provides a living for a very bizarre, eclectic group in the world. My take on it is it's a bit of a parasite, or has some parasite qualities to the resort community, i.e. cruises or giant resorts. You know, skiing is kind of a byproduct of the hotel industry. Skiing used to be the draw. Skiing used to be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it is anymore. Unfortunately, the ski resorts, certainly they want to provide good skiing and they want to have a good skiing experience, but it's literally kind of become a byproduct in a weird way. You know, we have the ski area industry also, I think we need to talk about, where you have, you know, your typical ski hill that's maybe it's in your town, maybe it's nearby, or certainly a place that's like the skating rink. It's a place for recreation. It's a place for social settings. And I think it's a very hard line for the ski area and or the ski resort to walk. Certain places certainly are doing it. Other places are completely on one side or completely on the other. From the retail side of things, I feel very, very sad for the ski shop, the ski house, whatever it used to be called in your town. They're gone. They're slowly going away. The ski shop, that iconic representative to the sport, to the culture, that wasn't at the ski area, that wasn't in the mountains, that was sitting in a town or sitting in a major city, that was that island of information, that island of passion, that island of resources that would tie you to the sport. Maybe it's where you were introduced to a club that became your ski club that took you somewhere. Maybe it was where you went and bought your new skis that you just could not wait to have, or you didn't even know you needed. You just kind of stumbled across the place and thought you might go on a ski trip. You know, those are going away. The consolidation of the ski industry kind of hurts, actually. You know, more and more companies are being owned by more and more larger companies, and it's kind of like all being designed for you. And I think we as skiers want some level of discovery left in our hands, whether it's the resort experience on I want to discover something, or maybe it's within the discovery of equipment, whether it's discovery of how cool a pair of race carvers are, or in fact, how cool a pair of big fat skis are in the perfect conditions. I'm proud over the years. I've tried to always stay with individuals. I've never really been a part of major groups. My boots, my bindings, my skis have always been independents, and I'm proud to say they still are. Elan's an independent company. We're not owned by a giant conglomerate. We're making our own decisions. We make skis. We don't make a whole bunch of other products. I'm not going to bash companies or corporations that do make all that, because they certainly are doing good things in the sport also, but I'm not sure they're doing it for the sport or if they're in fact doing it for the quarter earnings. We all need to make money. I know that. But yeah, I'm happy with over the years, whether it was back in the head Tyrolia Reichle days or something, I only wanted Reichle. Back in the K2 Lang Marker days, I only wanted K2. Back in the Razi Look Trapeur days, I only wanted Look. You know, I've always been with Lakey Poles. They're independent. I think it's important to support the independents. I know there's been a big trend recently to go with the man-made skis, or, you know, your local ski company. And I completely appreciate that movement. That's fine. There's some great skis being made out there. In my case, I choose Elan because that's my decision to be with, let's say, the local ski brand. From a standpoint of their independence, they are handmade. They've been in the same factory since 1945, and they make wonderful skis, and you got a couple hundred people working there. I had the coolest thing happen to me was I got to go to a retirement party. I just happened to be at the factory, and everybody goes, hey, we're going to lunch because we all eat together in this big cafeteria.
Okay.
I go to this kind of luncheon there at the factory, and it was a man retiring from the ski factory. He'd worked at the ski factory about 40 years.
Dang.
And I got to thinking how cool. I was just tripping out. I was like, oh my gosh, does he know that, like, he was making these skis? Like, did he know that the skis that he was making could have ended up being somebody's favorite skis? Are they the pair that's, like, sitting in the garage going, like, those are my favorite skis, man. I'm never getting rid of those ones. Or did they just end up in a demo deal, or ended up being those weird skis that, you know, you see at the ski swap sometimes? And I just was wondering. I was like, gosh, I wonder if he ever consciously said, okay, this is what these skis are going to be, you know?
Yeah.
I saw a lot of people that worked in the ski factory and retired from. Isn't that a funny thing? I mean, you think about it. Oh, so what'd your grandpa do? Oh, he built skis. What? What'd your dad do? Well, my dad, well, you know, he went to college. He ended up working at the ski factory for 35 years. The what? So there's a lot of levels of this dang ski industry, whether it's the salesman or the manufacturers or, I guess, the representatives, the athletes, the ambassadors, the journalists, the press. And then at the same time, like I say, we're kind of all parasites to this other thing of like the hotels and the skier. It's a pretty wild deal. I don't really have a placism on this other than I think any of us in any other field would be incredibly successful. And the fact that we chose skiing and the business of skiing to earn our living makes us strange, I guess. Talented and strange.
The talent and strangeness of folks have brought us together and kept us in the ski industry. But I feel like the placism really is get a product for you like Glenn has done his whole career. He's had a lot of choices out there, but he's always went to the one that spoke to him. Regardless of the size of the brand, it was the brand that Glenn wanted, and he didn't let anybody tell him different.
Yeah, you know, I use Plume touring bindings. I just went to the factory today and picked them up. And everything I've ever represented it is by choice, flat out, if we're talking about my equipment. And yeah, I think it's personal choice. It's relatively expensive, and it's your prerogative to choose what you want. And just because all the magazines or the press is telling you, if it's not speaking to you, don't use it.
Yeah, and you know what I find? You can read a lot of stuff in magazines, but when you look out in social media and you see your friends actually writing testimonials that they're not being paid for, that's when you know the stuff's great.
The unfortunate thing, like I kind of touched on a little bit there, is just the consolidation. I mean, we've got so many companies being owned by the same group that ultimately owns the retail centers, that ultimately owns a lot of the press, and then consequently owns, in fact, a lot of the ski areas. I don't think any of us, especially in the United States, really appreciates monopolies. We kind of, as a people, don't really like monopolies. But if you dig a little bit into the ski industry, you're going to see a lot of things that you swear are monopolies. But then again, I'm not in the position to break them up. I'm just a dumb skier that's made good for a long time.
All right. Glenn, so over your career, you have gone and skied all over the world. You've been in all different types of situations, and your skiing has changed over the years from hardcore bumps at one point to going on trips to Japan where you're skiing bumps at first, and then you're heading out into the backcountry. In the masses of skiers out there, people are starting to head out to the backcountry more and more. About 8 years ago, it was side country. People are starting to get out in the backcountry now. And with heading out there, there's a whole lot of risk that people need to take into consideration. And what is the placism on how people have changed their style of skiing and going out in the backcountry based on what you've seen?
I think knowledge actually has taken away the art of discovery. I've always been going out in the hills. Me and Darren Johnson spent a lot of time out in the hills, and nobody cared. Nobody wanted to go. Nobody was interested. It was difficult. You had to be stubborn. It was dangerous. You had no guarantee of what it was, and yet we go anyways, and I'm certainly not the first. There was, you know, being a Californian mountaineer, we had plenty of Californian skiers breaking tracks for us in the years prior to us. We didn't necessarily ski with them, but we knew their names. We knew of their exploits. We didn't necessarily know the places because we didn't know ourselves. We had to make our own bindings because the bindings didn't exist, so we were making our own equipment. You know, trial by error, you're learning and all these things. And honestly, I never, ever promoted it. I never talked about it. It was something me and him did, and a couple of friends would kind of join in on us occasionally. So there was no commercial value to this. This was what I did when I wasn't out promoting skiing. This is what I did for myself. This is what I did when I wanted to go skiing, so to speak. And I never really talked about it. And slowly but surely, it has become what everybody wants to talk about.
Yeah, and that creates a whole nother set of problems because everybody wants to talk about it, and then a lot of people want to do it. Mm-hmm. But in this day and age, the people that want to do it aren't exactly qualified. Some people are.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people going out there that don't know what they're doing, and that creates a whole nother set of problems for the ski community and the mountain community in general.
I know there's a lot of people that think education is the key. I'm a firm believer that guided experience is the key as far as backcountry excursions and things are. You know, I strongly recommend employing a mountain guide that's spent his whole life studying and becoming the person of qualifications that he is or she is. But at the same time, like I say, with information, you know, people go to a website and go, oh, this was skied yesterday. Okay, cool, we're going. Well, that doesn't mean it's going to be skiable tomorrow. It was skied yesterday. Perfect example of a friend of mine and Kimberly went out ski touring one day, and I actually ended up getting a flat tire. By the time I got the truck all back together, I said, you guys go ahead. They had skied a pretty awesome run, and going on their experience and what they told me, I went up there 2 days later, and yeah, here I am getting an ice axe out going, how did I get myself in this pickle? Because I went on their information. I didn't go on the information that was at hand. I think people have such a destination chose already. I remember going out in the hills for days and days and days and then coming back and getting a map out and going, okay, let's see where the heck we actually went, because I don't even have a clue. You know, we went here, we went there, we went over that mountain range, we went down into that valley, we skied that couloir, that was cool, and then we popped back out. You know, we didn't actually really know where we were going. We just were going. Granted, with all the technology, with the new boots, with the new skis, with, in fact, the new information about how it is. I mean, it's a natural reaction. I mean, people want to go skiing. I get in these meetings, I get in sales meetings, and everybody's, oh, that's free riding. That's free ski mountaineering. No, that's free ride mountaineering. That's backcountry big mountain free ride mountaineering, whatever the heck. And you're like, no, that's skiing. When Hannes Schneider had his ski school in the Alberg in the 30s, there was no lifts, there was no grooming, there was nothing that, you know, there was a lodge.
Right.
And they went up and they skied back down. And they went up under their own power and they skied back down. And so everything that has been created over the years is, in fact, not traditional skiing. The traditional skiing is this new backcountry skiing, I guess, or ski mountaineering, whatever you want to call it. Actually, backcountry and ski mountaineering, I guess, they are pretty different from each other.
But, yeah.
But I'm always yelling at people going, that's not, ski racing is the fabricated form of skiing.
Yep.
Skiing a groomed slope is the fabricated form of skiing. That's not traditional skiing. You cannot find a picture of anybody race carving 20 years ago, but you can find somebody skiing in a natural setting 50 years ago.
For sure.
No problem. There's tons of those pictures. So I think it's just people actually, maybe, I think it's just a natural desire. People might want to get back to the original form of the sport.
I think the plakeism from this and getting back to the original form of the sport is, it's not just about being in the classroom and learning. It's about going with guided experience and people that have that knowledge who can show you that in the field. And that's really where we're going to get the most knowledge. It's great to get the classroom stuff as well, but nothing can supplant having someone with experience in the field.
I don't want to say anything against the organizations that are doing wonderful jobs educating people. But if you had a couple of $100 to spend on a course or a couple of $100 to spend on a day with a guide, spend it on the guide. He's the one that's done the courses. He's the one that's educated. And you're not going to die on the side of the mountain because you're going to the top.
All right. There you go. And Glenn, I think getting into our final plakism, it's something that you've been focused on a lot lately, and that is technique. And a lot of skiers out there aren't really focused on refining their technique. And I know you a couple years ago thought to yourself, you're doing some TV things and you realized that you needed to go get that PSIA certification and really understand how to teach people. And tell me your thought on technique and teaching people and what the person getting into skiing should be doing.
I had the luxury of having really good coaches. And then after I had coaches, I had the luxury of having really good friends who were willing to talk to each other about what we were doing right, what we were doing wrong, and what we liked about each other's skiing and what we didn't like about each other's skiing or what we wanted to adapt to each other's skiing. We were constantly critiquing, especially in the mogul years and even now as we are in the mountains and things. And I don't think technique has anything to do with how many runs you made or how fast you skied. First one to the bottom means, you know, whatever. And I just think, without being a complete techie, I just think people, they might enjoy their day a little more if they explored some techniques. The whole sport right now is based on this pseudo powder experience. The powder's just above my knee. Everything's great. It's all untracked. It's the most beautiful day ever. But you know what? That's not reality. The reality is it's probably really heavy muck. Your skis are diving underneath the wind crust. It's rock hard because it's been blowing as hard as it is. And I just think for myself, the reason I've been able to stay involved all these years and the reason I've been able to, in fact, evolve is because I just love that dang sensation of the snow underneath my skis. You know, I love the contact of the edge on certain snow versus other snow. I love that feeling of my skis either sliding or breaking loose, or my body feeling the centrifugal forces of the turn that I've generated. I love planting my poles. I love exploring everything about technique. I love skiing with my knees glued together in the moguls. At the same time, I love railroad tracking down some groomer. And I just think if we took away this so-called idyllic snow that we're supposed to all be skiing on and actually replace it with the enjoyment of that touch that our skis give us in various places. I don't know. I don't really go to the mountain on a powder day because it's just full of aggression and weirdness. People may say that I don't have passion because it's supposed to be this, you know, super amazing experience.
No one says that about you, Glenn.
But I've never really felt that great about that. Their little stupid acronym, no friends on a powder day. Yeah, you know what? Screw you. I mean, whatever, man. Yeah, you know, hope you lose your ski first run, dude. You know what I mean? No friends on the powder day, bro. Woo-hoo! You know, have fun looking for that one. I don't know. It's just a really weird attitude that people have taken based on this so-called snow condition. And I myself really, really enjoy technique, whether it's skiing a mogul run almost perfectly or railing some hard, fast turns on some groomers, or in fact, doing some big old surfy free ride turns on my brand new fat skis. But it's not very often that that's the case. And yet every picture you look at, every film you look at, aside from the urban rail films, which are my favorite, by the way, they don't even know what powder is. I personally really enjoy exploring perfection of technique a little bit without being a total kook, you know. And I just think people would probably enjoy learning about how the skis work or how to make their skis work better in many, many conditions. You know, old Coombs used to say there's no such thing as bad snow, but there's some really bad skiers. And I like to think that I'm not a bad skier and there is no such thing as bad snow. I think it was Chouinard or Terre or somebody said, you know, give the mountain a chance. And if it kicks your ass someday because the snow was heavy or thick or crusty, well, guess what? Mountain won. That's cool. You'll get it tomorrow.
The takeaway or the plakeism here is there's something to be said for technique.
Oh, it's awesome. Very rewarding. And criticism about your technique, it's not criticism. Somebody might be giving you a tip and it might be a ski instructor or something. There was a time when the ski instructor or ski instruction was a big part of all the magazines. You know, you'd have the tech sections, you know, and all that. I just think we've gotten further and further away from that. And I think we might want to rediscover that. A lot of skiing, I think, needs to rediscover itself, whether it's the resort experience or the skiing experience. We quickly throw everything to the wayside. If somebody does a Daffy, somebody will laugh about it. Be like, yeah, sick Daffy, dude. Where if somebody was to hang 10 on a surfboard, that's hanging 10 on a surfboard. That's not, oh, what a funny, stupid old trick that nobody does anymore.
Right.
If somebody rides a wheelie on a bicycle, that's still a dang wheelie, you know? You ride a wheelie on your motorcycle, it's like, that's a wheelie on your motorcycle. In the skiing, we're so quick to throw away technique. We just throw it away like it's nothing. I mean, not going back to the straight days, but if you take the time to watch a film of the Mares or Stenmark or any of the straight skiers, you know, with just those massive pole plants and those massive body movements to get the skis to move across. And we just threw all that away. Nobody even cares. I just want to recognize it myself.
Okay, so that plakeism is going to be, don't forget your roots of instruction. Don't forget technique.
Learn ballet.
I think that can be the plakeism takeaway from the whole show is, you know what? Learn ballet.
Learn ballet. That's the end of it. Final answer.
All right, so you've been listening to Glenn Plake, the most interesting skier in the world.
What are we going to do next time? We need to talk about my opinion on ski boots and how important bacon is. Bacon for life, man.
All right, so Glenn Plake is the most interesting skier in the world.